Introduce yourself, please.
Hi, I'm Joy Coaston, currently representative of House District 28 in Southeast Leawood and Overland Park. First term representative.
And that's exactly why we have you here, my friend. But first, we're going to hear the open. This is State House Blend. I'm Sam Zeff. We're using coffee and donuts to help us better understand the historic legislative session underway in Topeka. The issues and the people in the Kansas legislature. Here we go. Joining Joy and me this morning in the KCUR 89.3 production studio is my colleague Dan Margulies, who runs our health desk. Dan, always nice to have you back at this desk.
Always nice to be here, Sam.
As Joy mentioned, she's a freshman Republican, and I want to introduce as many freshmen as we can during this session on State House Blend. And I'm going to talk about the legislative experience with you, but first, my two favorite questions. Tell me about your family and your pets.
I don't have any pets, so that one's easy.
Why is that?
We had a dog years ago. We had a wonderful golden retriever. She was a lovely dog. Mm. I really didn't like her for the first 5 years because she ate everything in our backyard. And then, unfortunately, we woke up one morning and she died of a heart attack. And it was really devastating for my husband
that.
And for me. And we kind of vowed that we would never have another pet again.
Well, I'm sorry I made you. Yeah, now I feel bad that I made you
relive this.
Started
this off on a really sad note.
Oh, jeez. You'd think I'd be better at this by now. So let's transition over to your family.
I've been married for almost 40 years to the same terrific guy. We met in a parking lot in Springfield, Missouri, and made our way up here to Kansas City for a job. We stayed because it was a great place to live and raise kids. We have two grown daughters, one who lives in Nashville, Tennessee, and another who lives here for now. She's in Lenexa with my son-in-law and two gorgeous grandkids. They will be moving, unfortunately, to upstate New York come end of July. She took a faculty position at SUNY in Oswego. So cold weather and a little further away than I'd like, but so that's my family.
I want to talk about, get into the legislative experience here, but speaking of well-educated people, I want to bring Dan into the conversation.
Too kind.
And ask, what's your first question for Joy?
Well, I noticed on your website, Joy, that you're a founding member of the Greater Kansas City Mental Health Coalition. So let me direct my first question to that subject. Community mental health centers are struggling to find providers in the state of Kansas, and the state doesn't have the resources to help people with mental illness find transportation, housing, jobs. So what would your priorities be given the budgetary constraints the state is now facing?
That's a tough question. Well, the first priority is to fix the tax system. We've pretty much gutted our mental health system, which is one of the reasons that I decided to run. I was a strong advocate for NAMI, which is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, for a number of years after we faced our own family mental health crisis. Trying to navigate the resources or lack of resources in Kansas City was a challenge, even for the most educated, my husband and myself. We had the money, we had the education, we certainly had the ability to advocate for our daughter, and we had a very difficult time finding access to care and giving her the treatments that she needed. She's doing very well, by the way, and we're very happy with all of the things that happened. However, she could not find what she needed here. That is why she's in Tennessee. And so it is something that really compelled me to think about why we, some of the most privileged in our community, could not even get what we needed. So if we couldn't do it, I wondered how others were trying to cope. It made me angry to live in one of the most prosperous states in the world and not be able to help the most vulnerable among us. So that was one of the things that prompted me to run. So if we can't fix the tax system to actually support those vulnerable people, I'm not sure what we're all working for. So,
I mean, we've been following this issue at the state mental hospitals for some time and doing a lot of reporting on that. And Dan, I'm wondering what you think has been happening so far in the legislature and what may need to have to happen to make that situation, which is pretty dire, I think.
Right, it is.
In both Osawatomie and Larned, make the, to fix that.
Right. Well, we have indeed been reporting a lot on the problems, particularly at Osawatomie.
Right.
And we just had a lengthy investigative piece about the patient who was murdered, not at Osawatomie, but who by a patient who had been in Osawatomie and was released.
Right.
Now, of course, that was entirely unpredictable, and the circumstances, needless to say, are tragic. But we know for a fact that the federal government has threatened to withhold and did withhold funding from Osawatomie because it didn't meet various standards. What should be done, do you think, about solidifying these institutions, which are necessary bulwarks in the whole mental health system?
Well, you can't do any of that unless you have funds and you actually hire people who are qualified to manage those programs and to intervene with those patients, to care for those patients. One of the things that I hear repeatedly in our testimony and in all of the committees I serve on is that the turnover rate in our agencies is around 30 to 35%, and that means that we're hiring people for very low wages across the board, training them, and then they're leaving and going someplace else. So if we can't raise the level of care by raising the standards by which we hire people and train them and keep them employed, then we can't make a difference. So I think that we have to begin to look at a systemic fix, and that means higher wages, better opportunity for training. They are stretched to the limit, and I think that you know, this term efficiency takes on a whole new meaning when you start to affect people's lives. So I think that we're well beyond that point.
So I think Sam is going to jump into the subject, which is, you know, you have pointed out when you were running and now that you're an elected official, the huge budget hole the state faces right now, $350 million this fiscal year, mm-hmm. $800 million in the coming fiscal year. Where is the money going to come from, particularly if the Supreme Court, the Kansas Supreme Court, rules in the Gannon case on the adequacy prong of school funding?
Right. Right. Where indeed? We do know that there's a Senate bill that's being kind of tossed around. I don't know if it's sufficient. It certainly doesn't address the March to Zero triggers that would come into effect or if they are, you know, remain in place. So that's a problem. I also think that they haven't brought back in that third tier of tax levels, and I think that that could be a problem, especially short term. I think from my perspective, my husband and I received those tax breaks. We didn't ask for them. We didn't hire one person because of them. I think that the majority of small business owners like the idea, but really doesn't play out the way that it intended to play out. So the bottom line is that we have to take a fairly aggressive stance with our tax reform if we're going to really pull ourselves out of this hole. I'm not sure if we're seeing a comprehensive enough package yet that has the legs to make it through.
Well, let me just pin you down here on a couple of things. So you would be yes on closing the LLC loophole, even though it would cost you money.
Absolutely.
And in full disclosure, cost me money. Mm-hmm. Are you, and I'm hearing you say that you'd like to see the third marginal mm-hmm. tax rate reinstated, yes?
I would, at least for a time. And I don't know that this has to be a permanent thing, but I do think that we have to think about the hole that we've dug.
Mm-hmm.
And I use the pejorative we, even though I didn't do it. But we're in a mess, and we're in a mess that can be fixed, but only if we're willing to do what's necessary to fix it. It's no different than if I had taken 10 credit cards and run up a huge debt for my family, but I wasn't willing to go out and get two jobs to pay it off. So I have to look at this in the same way that I would look about my own bank account and my own fiscal health. And I think we've been incredibly irresponsible with what we've done.
Well, there's a couple of other proposals out there. Raising the gas tax, where are you on that?
You know, I don't know. I think I'm ambivalent about that. I don't think it's a bad idea, but I think it should be a short-term idea. I think we need money fast, and that may be a place that we can find it. I have heard the argument that it might make people go to other, you know, to our border states to find their gas, and I'm thinking, well, that might work for a time or two, but I think most people, they go to the gas station that's closest to where they're headed, and usually we're headed into the state, not out of the state. So I'm thinking that's probably not a great argument. There's also some tobacco tax that
right.
is going to—
And liquor. And where liquor. Are you on that?
You know, I don't like regressive taxes, but I think that, again, in a short term, that may be. I'd also like to see food taxes come down eventually. I think that has to be part of the formula. So those kinds of regressive taxes really don't speak to the larger problem.
Yeah. Politically speaking, I've been hearing that conservatives are going to sit back, watch you raise taxes, mm-hmm. And then in 2 years flood your district with postcards saying that you're spending like a drunken sailor.
Yes. Heard that too.
Are you willing to take that political risk?
I am. I ran hard. I spent a lot of my last year doing nothing but knocking on doors, attending meetings, talking to individuals for the sole purpose of fixing my state. So I have two choices. I can try to push as hard as I can to fix it in the way that I think is best for our state, or I can move. And that is truly where I'm at. So if they want to come after me, let's go. Let's do it.
Bring it on.
Bring it on, because I am not backing down. This is my state. I've been here 40 years. Like I said, we came for a job. We stayed because it was a great place. And I'm not going to sit by idly and watch somebody else destroy it.
Given all the controversy surrounding the president's nominee for education secretary, mm-hmm. Betsy DeVos, who is an outspoken advocate for for-profit charter schools.
Indeed.
I was interested to see that another question you posed to your constituents on your website concerns efforts to replace Kansas's charter school law, which allows for-profit entities to manage them. What's your stance on that?
You know, again, I campaigned on a strong platform of public education. I come from a long line of teachers working in the public sphere. Because I believe that public education is the place where democracy begins to take shape. It's where you first learn that there are people who don't think like you, don't look like you, don't act like you, and yet somehow you have to learn how to coordinate your behavior. You have to learn how to cooperate your behavior. I think that it is the place where we really do have this space where we learn about the other. And so public education is about that. It's about bringing all of our community together. And I'm saddened that we would want to continue to cut our community into pieces that are so homogeneous that they never think about the other. And so that's what bothers me more than anything about charter schools or private schools, is that I believe that it just isolates us into our own way of thinking, and we don't ever have to think about the other. So I'm a strong advocate for public school. I ran on that in my own campaign as a way to tell people that this is what I stand for, this is what I think Kansas values are. I feel the same way at the national level.
One more quick question. You represent the Blue Valley School District,
I do.
Right?
Yeah, great school district.
Right, and one of the most affluent in the state.
It is indeed.
And what are the concerns that you're hearing from your constituents about the schools?
Yeah, I often tell Todd White, superintendent of Blue Valley Schools, that they have done an excellent job of keeping their parents and their students protected from what's really going on. Blue Valley School is indeed one of the finest schools in the world. It wins awards nationally and internationally all the time. It just did recently. But our classrooms in Blue Valley are some of the most complex in the country. Blue Valley School District typically has about 65 different languages being spoken in their school district. In my elementary schools in my district, 22 to 23 languages spoken.
Not uncommon, by the way, in Johnson County.
It's not uncommon.
That's true in Olathe, and even a little bit more true in Shawnee Mission.
That is right. So the complexity of the classroom has changed dramatically in that the teachers, the counselors, the principals, even the families have to try to understand all of those different cultures, all of those different learning behaviors. Some of these kids who are immigrating from different countries that have been war-torn come in with a variety of mental health programs. Or problems, rather. So the complexity of that population has changed, putting pressure on the teacher again. The other thing that people don't realize is that we have homeless kids in the Blue Valley District. We have kids that go hungry in the Blue Valley District. We have backpack food programs that go to 200 and 300 kids in every school because we have kids that are food insecure.
When you say that number, I just want to back up. That 200 or 300 across the district,
So,
which is still, I think, surprising. To think about that in the Blue Valley district.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's just the demographic complexity. But then let's also talk about the technological complexity. Every year, our technology changes. And so those schools need new equipment, new software, new learning skills. I read an article today that in Israel they're teaching grade schoolers how to think about cybersecurity. So we could use their help here in Kansas. But that they're taking a real stance and saying our kids have to be educated for the 21st century. You can't do that with 20th century technology. So if we're really serious about funding education, and having a generation of kids who are ready for the challenges that we're going to face in the 21st century, we better get busy. Because we're already behind the eight ball, even in Blue Valley. And that's the finest district that we have.
Right.
Yeah. I want to move on to a couple of other issues. So I was looking to see the bills that you've sponsored in your short time in the Kansas legislature. Reinstating due process for teachers, not surprising, coming from your education background. Abolishing the death penalty, prohibiting privatization of the state's mental health hospitals. And I'm wondering, how is that playing in your Leawood Overland Park district? That used to be represented by the very conservative Jerry Lunn. Are you out of touch? Are you in touch? Or what are the politics here?
Well, that's an interesting question because I really hadn't approached those issues from a perspective of what Jerry Lunn had done or what his thinking was.
Well, but surely you're thinking about what do my voters want or need.
You know, my voters are, I think, from what I have seen, again, I knocked on over 4,000 doors in my district this past summer. I spoke to close to 1,000 people one-on-one. Overwhelmingly, I heard, fix the tax problem, fund our schools, let's get back to a center way of thinking. I don't think any of these bills run afoul of that thinking. I think any conservative would be looking at what we spend to support the death penalty in Kansas, and they would be saying, why are we spending $1 million this year to defend people on death row, and we have 6 people on death row right now, why would we be spending that money when we could take that very same money and put it in early intervention? Mm-hmm. So we'll see. That's probably the most controversial one that people might be curious about. I just fundamentally believe that it doesn't reduce crime. There's nothing to suggest that this is a good policy. We haven't executed a person in Kansas, I think, since the 1960s, and yet we continue to pay for the defense of people.
1965.
So we pay for that defense over and over and over again. It just seems that maybe it's time again to think about.
So your opposition to the death penalty is a pragmatic one.
It's very pragmatic.
It's not necessarily a moral one.
I have some problems with the idea that we often do execute people who are not really guilty of the crime. We know that that happens. We know that minorities are typically have a higher rate of that type of execution than other races. So I think that there are moral issues, but the driving force is that if I am a legislator who has to decide how to spend my tax dollars in the best possible way, I have a choice. I can spend $1 million on the worst of our society, or I can spend it on the best of our society. And I choose to spend it on the best of our society, those who we might be able to help not go down that path. And I think that that's early intervention for mental health, better education. I mean, all of those things that truly can help somebody get a better life trajectory. So,
honestly, though, is it going to get any traction?
We're actually going to have a hearing.
You've got a hearing on
it. We have a hearing.
When's the hearing on it?
It is this week, this coming week. Russ Jennings has agreed to give it a hearing. So I think we're pretty excited about that, and I think it has a chance to at least get out of committee.
You've got a few co-sponsors, but it's not a committee bill, so that makes it a little bit more difficult politically, legislatively, to maneuver it through the process. So
yeah.
You still feeling optimistic?
Today I am. Talk to me later in the week.
Well, what the heck? You got a brand new State House blend mug and a box of donuts in front of you.
Anything could happen.
There's nothing but...
I'm still naive. I've only been there for, has it been 4 weeks?
That's right. Enough that you can look at your watch.
Yeah, you see that. 4 weeks I've been there.
Let me ask you, I want to talk a little bit about just the experience. And first of all, I want to hear, do you think that you're being heard by leadership? There's a new speaker, Ron Reichman, a friend of this podcast. One of the complaints before you got there was that it was a very closed system, right? Mm-hmm. That people's voices weren't being heard. Do you think now you're being heard by the speaker, by the majority leader, by your committee chairman? Mm-hmm. Do you feel the process is open?
I do. I have to say I am incredibly optimistic about what I'm seeing. And I too was a little skeptical because I went into this knowing full well what the culture of the organization had been. But I have to say that the way that Ron Reichman and Don Heineman in particular are working together to make sure that the process is more open. We have so many different opportunities to learn about tax policy, about health policy. We have every day some kind of lunch and learn program that's put on. And we are hearing multiple sides of the story. So we're not just hearing one-sided. We're actually getting facts and data, and that's a good thing.
Not alternative facts.
Not alternative facts. They're real facts. And I'm excited about that because it does and I've heard people say this is a totally different atmosphere. And so I'm excited about what I'm hearing and what I'm feeling. I think Ron is a good guy. Yeah.
Everybody says that.
I truly think he wants to do what's right. Mm-hmm. Don Heineman as well. I think he's just a terrific guy. My committee chairs have been very open from what I can see so far. We've got people who, but I think they also know that there has been a bit of a landscape shift. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have a very different house now. So,
one final question. Where are you on rolling back campus concealed carry?
I'd like to see hospitals and schools exempt from the current law for sure. And I am getting emails on both sides of this argument. I do respond to them. Overwhelmingly, my district, I will say that is one of the questions that I have looked at. 83% of my district has chimed in so far that they do not want guns on campus.
Returning your emails, are you?
I am.
Good for you.
I am.
Good for
it's
you.
It's really, really amazing.
A new day has dawned.
It's amazing. I actually responded to a constituent, sent my first official letter. This is a fellow who had sent me a letter right after the August primary. Telling me that he had tried for several years to get a response from his legislator, who shall go unnamed, who he said, all I wanted was a license plate indicating that I had served 6 years in the Army Ready Reserves. And I couldn't even get an email back. So over the last 6 months, I've worked with some people up in Topeka, and we've tried to understand what this means and how you even do such a thing. I worked with a couple of other new legislators who were equally eager to support our military in any way we could. Found out that it was not a fiscally neutral idea because the military is exempt from certain fees, and it was going to cost the state about $500,000 to set up the license plates, you know, to print them, even if they did the fees later. Anyway, I sent him a letter to say, this is what we've done, and we can't do it right now, but we hope to do it again, you know, in better days. And he was so pleased. And to me, that's just one of the great things about being where I am. I think this is really just an incredible opportunity, and I'm very honored to be able to do stuff like that.
You know, one of the things I've found over the years in the media, you know, you may not be surprised to hear this, but, you know, we get a fair bit of complaints. And if all you if you just acknowledge the complaint and talk to people,
that's the battle.
Yeah, you've won more. You've maybe won 90% of the battle.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Yeah, I mean, I do. I even respond to those who disagree with who I disagree with, and I will say, you know, this is...
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, I mean...
I'm taking the mug back, if you don't.
Yeah, I just have... I think that's my job. I have to respond.
Final thought or question, Dan Margulies, for Joy.
You've never run for elective office before, right?
No.
This is the first time. So when did you start thinking about doing that, and why?
I started thinking about this about a year ago, December. I was very upset about what was happening with school funding and many, many issues across the state, mental health funding being one of them. And I had just been very upset for a long time. And I can't remember the exact moment, but I said something in the course of a conversation with my husband. And he said, Joy, you know, you really can't change anything posting something on Facebook.
What, really?
Really? Because, you know, usually you're there going, damn, so I'm so angry. He says, you know, that really doesn't work. It doesn't change a damn thing. He says, if you want to change something, you should run for office. And I went, huh. Well, then I happened to be at a conference where I was sitting with a table of women, and we were being angry about some other issues. And I said to them, you know, some days I just get so angry, I think I should run for office. And three of them cornered me and said, we think it's you need to run for office, too. And within a couple of days, I met with a few people like Melissa Rooker and some
friend
other
friend of this podcast.
Yes. And was encouraged to run, took my grandkids over to the election office and filed and just said, OK. Well, and it was that simple. But I did tell my husband, I said, OK, I'm going to do this. If I don't win, we're moving. If I do win, and I truly can't change anything, we're moving. I mean, that's how serious I am about.
You mean moving from Kansas?
Moving from Kansas. Yeah.
Wow.
I have to tell you, my youngest daughter, who just took the job in New York, she had four or five campus interviews, different around the country, phone interviews. She had a pretty good run trying to find her faculty position. Her first question to them when they called to set up an interview, how does your state support your higher education?
Mm-hmm.
How are your schools funded? Mm-hmm. She would not go to a state that did not support education. And I think that's what's going to happen so across the state. So I'm pretty serious about pushing back on this.
I mean, it's been a tough road for higher education. $75 million in cuts over the last over the last 3 years. And am I hearing you say before we wrap it up here? Because you hear this all the time, right? Guns are going to drive people out of the state. Lack of funding is going to drive people out of the state. And did we lose a fine young Kansan to SUNY in New York because of this?
We did. Absolutely. We did. Yeah. Not only my daughter, but I know other people who have said they will not stay in Kansas. Blue Valley School District, for the first time ever, when they go out for their recruiting scavenger hunt across the state, they actually had hours where people did not come to their booth.
That's astonishing.
That's astonishing.
That is astonishing. That is astonishing.
So we are at a point where if we don't take bold steps to bring back the Kansas that we all grew up with and that we love, it will not be worthwhile for me. I hate to be doom and gloom, but I don't want to live in a place that doesn't support those things. And if the other side wins out and they don't, okay, I'm cool with that. Mm. But I won't live here.
Got a lot of work ahead of you, my friend.
I do. Yeah. I do. I'm eager. I think we have a really good group of people, and I'm cautiously optimistic. I think we have an opportunity. I think we have a bigger opportunity this session than we will next session. So we've got to go big or go home.
Yeah. Well, because you don't have to run for re-election in this particular session. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
No, I think we will just have more political will right now than we will next year.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's my take on it.
We have to leave it there. My thanks to my KCUR colleague, Dan Margulies, who I understand is skipping shul this morning to be with us this
too.
Morning, and Joy. So
don't tell anybody.
Yeah, well, it's a little late now. But Dan, always great to have you at this table.
Always
I'm a little smarter now because you're here.
Thank you.
Statehouse Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you like to download your podcast. You can also find us on kcur.org/statehouseblend, and they make a little room for us over there on Up to Date with Steve Kraske Tuesdays at 11 a.m. Hey, you guys a fan of the NPR One app? I bet you do. If you want to listen to us there, search for Statehouse Blend in Explore, and then remember to tap follow. And if you dig what we do here, leave a little review for us over on iTunes. We'd like to know what you think. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Sam Zeff, and my co-host Brian Ellison over there at Statehouse Blend, Missouri, is at PTS Brian. I'm Sam Zeff. I'll see you around the radio.